I think the worst thing you could do is just give into it early on and then just let it take over your life.
Right.
With terrorists, like if you don't go on vacation to Europe, then the terrorists are winning. You can, you know, I mean, if you let them take over your life, that's what they're trying to do. And I mean, it's kind of the same thing that your anxiety and OCD is trying to do. It's just trying to take over. And if you give in and you let it take over that easily, I mean, you don't stand a chance. It's just going to take over your life, and then you're not living a life at that point. You're not doing anything you want to be doing.
Okay, welcome to the podcast. I am Dr. John Duffy, and I have the good fortune today to be sitting across from a most impressive, wholly unique young guy. From the moment I met this guy a couple years ago up until like the moment he walked in here a few minutes ago, he brings this like really great energy to any room, and is a really unique positive character in my life, and in probably the lives of everybody he is around. So I welcome Emmett to the little studio here today. Welcome, man.
Thank you.
Okay, so you just told me a moment ago. So what I wanted to talk to you about was in part, like, I think you have this enormous well of strengths. I think you're a really bright guy. I think you're a really likable guy. And somehow it seems like when you're around, something's going on. Like, I'm always kind of curious, like, what's going on in Emmett's world? And you just told me a minute ago that you had overcome, like, you and I had talked about, like, some anxiety that you'd been having, and that you had kind of overcome some OCD symptoms.
Oh, absolutely. I would say more than symptoms, I kind of went through this entire OCD. I don't know how you
would. Yeah, you were kind of a full-blown.
I mean, I went in.
Diagnosable OCD for quite some time, right?
For quite some time. For about maybe a year's time, which is not as long as a lot of other people have to go through it. But it was definitely something that I'd say I overcame at this point, but it definitely took over my life for a while, almost for a year's time. And it's only recently that I've overcome it. I actually went into a program called Alexian Brothers, which is specifically a mental behavioral hospital, just their branch of it.
Right.
And I was in the program for 4 weeks, and it was just something that I went into, and I was kind of like, I gotta just kick the butt of this. And I just kind of went all or nothing, and I ended up overcoming it completely. So I'm pretty happy with that.
That's awesome. And, you know, and I think it's a rare thing for somebody to be able to say, yeah, I'm past the thing that made me really anxious. Take me back. How did it manifest when it was, it's probably not fun, but take me back to the worst day. You know, what did it look like? What did you do? You know, what were your OCD symptoms like?
Well, specifically, when it got to the thick of it, when it got to my worst day, it was, my OCD was based around numbers, and like equations that I would set up in my head. And every number out of, it would usually be out of like a set of 12, which is kind of what I was counting, which I would basically count, every step I took, every move I made, just everything really that I did, I would kind of just count in my head subconsciously, without even thinking about it. And I started to kind of associate different feelings and different emotions or different scenarios, whatever it might be. Different thoughts, which is common for OCD, with specific numbers. So that's something that is kind of different and interesting, and that's something that actually made it harder for me to even really diagnose myself with OCD, because I had no idea it was OCD. Because I know a lot of people think of OCD as being like germaphobes or whatever it might be, anything like that.
I don't want to touch this doorknob.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah. Things more like that. And that's why I thought, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't even have to think about it. I don't have OCD. Like, I mean, this is something else, like something bigger is going on here. Which is common for people with OCD, is thinking that you're kind of the only person in the universe with whatever you have. Or you're the only person in the universe that anything matters. So anything you do affects the rest of your life or the people around you. And that definitely made it a lot harder, because for a while I thought I was just going insane. And there were times where there was one time my mom actually was taking a video of me. I didn't know it. And I was just like, yelling to her. I was like, what's going on? Like, am I going crazy? Like, I truly thought I was going insane. And I asked her, I was like, tell me how I'm not going insane. And she just didn't know how to answer. Cause it really was something totally different. At least it seemed like that to us, cause we had never heard of it. And I think that's another difficult thing is OCD doesn't have a lot of awareness. I mean, people hear about OCD, but the actual disorder itself doesn't get real awareness.
Right. We talk about ADHD. We talk about depression. Yeah. We talk about anxiety generally, but OCD, I don't know if we get it very well.
And I think even when we do get it, I mean, maybe not get it, but it's just very, like, it's very like rudimentary OCD. Like it's just some, or it's usually part of a joke or something, like, you know, on those sweaters, like OCD obsessive Christmas disorder, which I honestly never had a problem with. It's not like anybody's like doing that to hurt.
You didn't take offense at that.
No, absolutely not. I don't think that's something that I need to take offense about, but I can understand how people would be offended because it's something that really does take over people's lives. And it's a real thing and people just I don't think people like really understand how real it is. And people are really only just starting to understand how real depression and anxiety and things like that are. And that it's not just like a state of mind. You can push yourself out of it. It's actually like a proper chemical imbalance, whatever it might be. And it's really difficult for people. So I think that is why it can be really upsetting.
Was the label important to you? Was it important to know, like, okay, this thing has a name. Like, you're talking about this moment with your mom where you're like, how am I not going insane? Finally recognizing, all right, this is what I have. This is what I'm suffering. Did that help you?
I think absolutely it did, because mainly the first thing that it really changed for me was the fact that it gave me an idea that this was something that can be overcome, which I didn't know if it was because I didn't know what it was. So for the first couple of months when it really started picking up, it would be little things that I would become, you know, obsessive about. And of course, all that, I would do little rituals, little things, whatever it might be. And I thought it was just a phase. I thought it was a passing phase. I really did think that it was something that was just going to go away with time and right. I was going to get over it. And then a couple months went by and it got even worse and worse every single day. And I started to actually get afraid. Like, I was like, oh, wow, I don't have as much control over myself as I used to. And this doesn't seem like it's going away. So at that point, I didn't know if it was something that would ever go away. And once I labeled it as OCD and once we recognized what it really was, I was able to understand and talk to people in the community and realize that it's something that you can overcome. And it doesn't go away ever, because it's something that you'll have for the rest of your life, but it's something that you can totally learn to cope with. And not just cope with, I mean, really live with.
Like thrive.
Thrive, you can, absolutely. Yeah. You don't need to, it's not something that is going to, you can get over it and you'll always have it, but you can absolutely live a total life with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And you know, it's easy to talk about in a way in retrospect, even like looking back on that night with your mom where you're like, I'm losing my mind here. It's really uncomfortable, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is uncomfortable to the point. I mean, it does kind of gives me the chills to talk about it. It is upsetting, but of course I want to talk about it because it's something that I'm passionate about now, about helping other people with. So it definitely is, though. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life. I mean, I'm only 17, but it's still definitely probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I mean, there were days where it would take me just hours to do anything. Like, I mean, walking from my stairs or the top of my stairs from at my bedroom to the front door of my house, I mean, it could take 2 or 3 hours just because I would take steps and steps and I would end up making up equations about all my steps. And then I would have to go backwards and I would literally walk backwards and walk all the way back up to my room. And it was just, I mean, it was really terrible. It was
brutal.
Exhausting.
Right. Yeah. Brutal. Exhausting.
Yeah.
Maybe
truly
that's
exhausting.
The right word.
Mentally and physically exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the hardest part about it.
And, you know, you say, you know, your mom was part of the process. Was she helpful in helping you manage it in real time when it was actually going on?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. Just because I think that's also really quickly, I think that's something that is really another thing that's so hard about OCD and just mental disorders in general is that, I mean, they're getting a lot more awareness now, But especially, I mean, even 20, 30 years ago, it was they really didn't have any awareness. I mean, for the most part, people knew about them, but it wasn't something that people dealt with very easily.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of parents out there who, I mean, some people don't even believe in mental illness, and there's a lot of parents who just don't understand it. And I think for children, anybody, kids, doesn't matter, adults even, a lot of times their family members don't understand it, and it can be something that's really difficult, because then not only are you going through this, I mean, terrible, whatever it might be, whatever you're going through, you don't have any support at all from anybody else, so it's very isolating. But I think what really helped for me, and what I'm really grateful for, is my entire family was very accommodating. I mean, I wouldn't say accommodating, because it wouldn't be good to be accommodating when it comes to OCD, because that would be...
Enabling. Exactly. Symptoms.
That would be enabling. So good that point. Wouldn't be good. But they definitely, I mean, they were appreciative of it. I mean, they totally understood what I was going through in a way. I don't want to say understood, actually. But it was something that they were a lot more sensitive to. I mean, my mom, you know, she studied like child psychology in college. So that's something that she had already been, you know, exposed to. So it was something that she had an easier time dealing with, but she still didn't know what she was doing.
Right.
It was more so just that she was willing to help me in whatever way she could, to help me get better, which at first was enabling. And she didn't realize that, just because OCD, again, doesn't have enough, you know, people aren't exposed.
People don't know it. Right.
Exactly. So people don't know that enabling isn't what you're supposed to be doing. So for a while, I mean, that's something that's really difficult, is your family might even be trying to help you, but they're not at all. It's almost like helping somebody with an addiction. It's almost like giving somebody with an addiction whatever it is they are addicted for, whether it be alcohol, drugs, whatever it
right.
is. And that's something that is really terrible. And that's something that's also really difficult, because you see them suffer if you don't help them in a way, which isn't really helping them, but you see them suffer, and then you don't know what to do, because then you feel bad either way. And it's just, and a lot of people resort to actually enabling, which is the worst thing you could do, because it only helps it grow. And OCD is a lot like addiction. So.
Absolutely right. And it does grow. I mean, you've described that really
absolutely.
Well. So I can imagine a lot of parents, and I think I've known some, who, because they'd be anxious about their child's anxiety and not understand it, would kind of have that vibe of like, please just snap out of it. Stop doing the counting. Stop doing
exactly
the shuffling.
Because a lot of parents mean well. A lot of parents don't purposely. I mean, they don't get. It's not like they don't want their kid to be like okay or happy or whatever it is. It's just that it gets to the point, certainly, where they don't so much. They don't know what to do so much so that it makes them upset, and they actually kind of get. You know, I mean, maybe not mad, but just kind of upset at the entire situation. So then they get anxious, and then they're the ones who get a little angry, and then they don't understand it. So they're just like, why can't you just like get past this? And it's definitely something that puts a lot more pressure on the child or whoever it is at that point. It's even worse for them.
So isolating, right? You can
Absolutely.
Just imagine, right? Like, okay, my parents, my mom isn't willing to really hear me out and understand this thing. You know, like imagine if it had gone differently for you. I think it might have.
Oh, I don't know if I would be where I am now if it weren't for my parents and my family. Because if this was something that they just kept telling me to get past and get over, I wouldn't have been able to. You just can't. And that's what people don't
understand.
Can't
just shake it off.
You can't. I mean, it's different when it comes to like, I don't know, like a breakup or something. And that's just something you need time to get over. But I mean, this is something that is, it's, not everybody has it. Only specific people have actual OCD
right.
or depression or whatever it might be. And it's really something that's more physical than people think it is, because it's something that's actually going on in the brain. I mean, there's a certain like reward system that's going on there that increases your need to do it every single time, just like a drug.
Yeah.
And it really is so much like an addiction, which is very scary.
Yeah, it does sound like a controlled kind of, you know, your thinking and what you did physically, your movements through the house, through, you know, the hallways, through school?
Absolutely. Oh, everywhere. And that was what started to become so difficult. I mean, I was late to classes, like constantly. And then, you know, I started talking to my parents about it, blah, blah, blah. And the school started trying to help, and they said, oh, maybe we can give him, like, a late pass or something. And again, they're trying to just be helpful, but they don't realize that that is just enabling. So it makes it even worse. So it just gets to the point where I don't even know what to do, because I can't let them let me be late, but at the same time, I can't even show up on time.
Right,
so it's really difficult everywhere you go.
Do you have a theory, and this is just a point of curiosity, as to why it manifested in numbers and, you know, calculations and formulas for you?
Well, I think it's just a way of simplifying things, because I think it also has to do with the fact that I do have a very anxious mind, and I have a very, like, rapid mind. Just in a way that I have so many thoughts moving about constantly that it provokes anxiety.
Yep.
So I think that obviously played into it. And I think it was sort of just a way of trying to simplify things and make it almost, I don't know if I would say easier to deal with, but just kind of like label things and kind of make it so nothing was... I really think with OCD, people like things to be black and white. So I think that is a reason why people like to associate things with things or say like, oh, if I do this, this bad thing will happen to me or my family. And I think it kind of just, it's like labeling things. It's like making it more organized, at least for me.
Creating order out of chaos.
Absolutely.
To some extent.
Yeah.
Was there, when I've worked with people with OCD in the past, often they'll say, you know, if I don't do X, why is going to happen to me, my family, the world? You know, did you have that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I would say that is like a pretty base, like kind of almost the foundation of everybody's rituals when it comes to OCD, is something, I mean, not always, but what OCD is people with OCD often have, I mean, almost always have intrusive thoughts. And that's kind of where the rituals start to begin. So what happens is they'll have intrusive thoughts that they don't like. So it might be that something bad's going to happen to their family or themselves, maybe something with like a disease that they're afraid of getting, whatever it might be. And then they sort of come up with rituals or behaviors that they can do to kind of make them feel like they're somehow keeping themselves or keeping that from happening.
Right.
So I might get an intrusive thought about something bad happening to my family. And then I think like, oh, if I do this, if I whatever it might be, it's totally different for everybody. But if I do this one thing, that will prevent that from happening. So then what happens is it kind of creates this feedback cycle where you do it and then it makes your anxiety go down. And then you need to do it even more to make your anxiety go down the next time. So that's where it is similar to a drug. And then it just gets
where it escalates, where it gets worse and worse.
Totally.
Yeah. Why do you think you had that need for control to such an extent in your world?
Well, I think, like I was saying, with anxiety, that's something that at least makes people feel better. I mean, that's, I'm afraid of flying. That's somewhat, I'd say. And I think a lot of people are for the reason that they don't have any control while they're flying. You know, it's all in the pilot's control. And that's something that really scares them. Just everybody knows that driving is more dangerous than flying, but you feel better when you're driving your own car than you do being flown by somebody else. And I think that is obviously for people who are especially anxious, they look for control in a lot of other ways, and maybe not all the time, but I think that is definitely a reason why I acted like that and tried to make more order out of things.
Well put, man. What do you think the core of it was for you? In other words, you know, why do you think this developed in you in the first place? You know, like...
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I didn't know if it... Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. My iPhone just went out and I didn't know.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, yeah. It's a makeshift system.
Absolutely.
How do you think this all started for you? What do you think the core of it? Like, maybe we can agree, like, that there's some... you know, flow of chemicals in your brain that drives part of this, right? But do you think there's something environmental, something in your world that drove this and kind of created this set of symptoms in you?
Well, I mean, I think there's definitely, I think the environment, I mean, nurture versus nature. I think nurture definitely plays a role in what sort of OCD you develop and what you become obsessive about and what intrusive thoughts you have. But I do have to say, obviously, that OCD is genetic. So it's something that is obviously, you're born with OCD, and it's something that you always have. But I think, yeah, definitely, there are reasons in people's lives for why they might have specific intrusive thoughts. And I guess maybe for me, I think a lot of my intrusive thoughts were mainly around my family, like my sisters and my mother. Just because I get very protective over them.
Right.
And it's something that I worry about a lot. And especially having so many sisters, I have 5 sisters. It's just a lot of, to keep track of. So I definitely do get worried when everybody's apart, when everybody, I don't know. I think that's something that played into the fact that my OCD, I became obsessive about that sort of thing, about keeping my family safe. So everything that I was doing, I thought it was preventing my family from, you know, dying of whatever terrible disease or something like that, which of course sounds ridiculous in hindsight, but yeah, hindsight is 2020.
And listen, I think anxiety in all of its manifestations, when you talk about it like you and I are, bring it to the light of day, it always sounds ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, just like, you know, you're right. Like, yeah. You're safer in a plane than you are
and
in your
even,
car.
I mean, even not just in hindsight, a lot of something that's interesting about OCD and a lot of anxiety is that people know there's often no reason to be afraid. Even when they do have the OCD or the anxiety, even when they're in the thick of it, I mean, these were things that I knew were just ridiculous things that I didn't know why. I really believe them, but the fact is that when you have anxiety and when you have OCD or whatever it might be, you really do believe that these bad things could happen.
Right.
And you really do feel the same sort of, I mean, there was a study that I heard about somewhere, where, they were looking at like the brains in an MRI machine, that the brains of somebody with OCD and somebody without OCD, or just anxiety, whatever it was. And the sort of, fear that you get from, you know, whatever, somebody holding a gun up to your head is just on par with the same sort of fear that you can have from anxiety and OCD in a normal situation. And people don't realize that your body actually acts as if you are, like, in that sort of situation. I mean, maybe not specifically somebody holding a gun up to your head, but just in a high-intensity, high-anxiety situation. And, you know, people who are afraid on planes, they're not just, like, afraid. I mean, they're terrified. You know, people who actually have, like, phobias of flying. And that's what people don't realize, is that it's actually a different sort of... I mean, the brains are different between people who have that. So there are people who are a little afraid of flying, and then there are people who really, I mean, are terrified of flying, and people don't realize that that's something they can't control.
Yeah, I think anybody who hasn't felt panic-stricken, you know, in a benign environment, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And you're right.
Almost
like,
out of the blue. It's,
right.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, like, I think... you know, genetically, man developed this when we needed it. Back when, you know, a saber-toothed tiger was going to attack us.
Fight
or
flight response.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And now we have no use for it. But still, for some of us who tend toward anxiety, it gets triggered nonetheless.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that, I mean, even with it's really interesting because it actually does come from the fight or flight response, which so many people have heard about nowadays.
Sure.
But I mean, you know, when people get anxious, their heart starts beating faster to pump more blood so they can run from whatever it is they need to run from. I mean, their pupils dilate so that they can, like, see things better in the night. It's really like you have the same sort of symptoms that you do as if you were being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Like,
absolutely,
you say, man. But it's in the normal urban environment.
Did it ever feel like the accommodation, the counting, the formulas, the movements worked? You know, like, sometimes I think, like, some OCD symptoms seem adaptive, manage the anxiety a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely. That's the reason why they become so addicting, is because what happens is, you know, you might have whatever, an intrusive thought pops in your head and your anxiety skyrockets. And then at that moment, you kind of have to decide, I mean, when it comes to actually beating OCD, you have to decide if you're just going to sit with that anxiety and get past it, so that the next time it's not as difficult. Or what you'll do is you'll do a ritual or whatever it is that you do.
Right.
And it will bring the anxiety down right away. And then it gives you sort of, I think it's negative feedback technically.
Right.
Because it gives you positive feedback on a negative thing. And then it brings your anxiety down. So you think, oh, hey, when I do this ritual, it brings my anxiety down. So every time I get anxiety, I'll do this ritual.
Right.
And then over time, just the same thing where you need more of a drug over time, you need more rituals. So your anxiety goes up the next time, and instead of one ritual, you need two. And then that's where it starts to grow out of control.
Right, right, right. And it really did snowball for you.
Oh, absolutely. And you can see it too. I mean, it really goes, it doesn't just grow quickly, it grows exponentially. I mean, at first it's little things, and then it's twice as much and twice as much and twice as much, and then it just skyrockets and you have no control over it. And that's the thing that's really scary about OCD, is it creeps in, slightly that you'd have no idea it was really a problem before it was too late.
Right.
And that's the, I mean, it really does get people like that. It's very, it's scary.
Well put, man. All right. So you then go to this hospital-based anxiety management program. What happens there? How does that 4 weeks change your life?
So, well, basically, they had a lot of different programs for mental disorders, whatever it was. And the one that I was in was OCD and anxiety. That was like the specific program. And it was run, you know, you had a group of people that you were a part of, and it was run by therapists.
Right.
Specifically, ERP therapists, which is exposure response prevention, which is like the number one way to fight OCD and anxiety, which is what I was saying before. When your anxiety skyrockets, it's basically choosing to sit with it, and then letting your anxiety go down naturally, so then that the next time your anxiety doesn't go up nearly as high.
The frightening part being exposure, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Being like, I have to expose myself
and
to
you
the
really
fear
do.
Of
so,
pain.
I mean, it's a really interesting place, actually. It's kind of like a really, like, I mean, it's very, like, it's a very interesting way to treat it. So, you know, you're walking around the hospital, and people who are afraid of, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe specifically eye contact, or just have a fear of social situations, you'll be walking down the hallway of the hospital, and there will be someone there with like a sign around their neck that says like, please like look at, or like stare at my eyes or something.
No kidding.
Yeah. And you'll be in the hallway, and then, you know, you cooperate because you're just, everybody's trying to help each other. And
you're flooding them with that stimulus.
So then you just stare at them. And I mean, that's something that obviously provokes their anxiety.
Right.
So it's really difficult for them, but it's something that they have to sit with, to get through it. So it's really interesting. I mean, it's different for everybody. And some exposures are a lot more intricate, than others. And It's really cool, actually.
Can you give us an example of your exposure? Like, I get, like, the eye contact thing.
Yeah.
What a great intervention, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're going to flood this person with eye contact.
Yeah.
Don't they get used to making it, right? So what worked for you?
Well, for me, a lot of it was, see, it was different. I mean, it not just for me. It's different for everybody. But, you know, for people who are might be afraid of germs or afraid of touching the doorknob or things like that, what they'll actually do is they'll go and they'll physically touch the doorknob and they'll hold their hand on the doorknob until they really start. I mean, people have panic attacks like constantly. It's a very exhausting process.
Until your body finally,
really,
because you can't be anxious forever.
Exactly.
Because
it gets to the point where your body's just exhausted. And that's why a lot of times after like panic attacks, people just like pass out because like they've just completely exhausted everything in their body.
Right, right.
And they just can't be anxious anymore. So they just fall asleep.
Right.
Because they've just, it's crazy. So yeah, it's definitely an exhausting process to that. To answer your question, my exposures, there were more so things like, let me try and come up with a better example. I mean, I guess if I were to relate it to, with the numbers,
yeah.
Something that like I had trouble with was like walking up and down stairs because I had to like step on the stair at a specific number or whatever it was. So an exposure that I was doing a little bit further on was just literally just walking up and down the stairs without like stepping back and getting off the stairs before I get back on and like resetting the number that I was stepping on, I mean, in my head.
Right.
And so I would just walk up and down the stairs without trying to walk up and down the stairs without correcting myself or stepping backward or like changing what number I was on.
And how much exposure did it take? Like I get, you're right, in the abstract, that sounds so funny. Like,
yeah,
this is how we got rid of your OCD, walking up and downstairs.
It's a silly sounding thing.
Right.
Definitely, yeah.
But I can imagine how powerful that is. How long did it take, you know, up and downstairs, you know, in order for you to feel like, oh, I'm starting to, you know, shift here. I'm starting to manage this in a different way.
Yeah. Well, I was in the program for almost 5 weeks, so it was 4.5 weeks or something. And so, I mean, obviously it took that amount of time for me to get over all of my OCD. But it's interesting because what they actually do, in ERP is that you come up with a hierarchy of rituals, right? So exposures that you're going to do from the least, anxiety provoking to the most, which is what you do, you know, later weeks or when you're about to leave.
So you start with the easy stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something like what you're asking about. I mean, you can see it's interesting because, you know, even after just like 1 or 2 days or even after just one exposure, you can see how it's something that can help. And you can see how it's something that that you, it's just letting your body become more familiar with the anxiety that you have, and realizing that whatever it is, the intrusive thought is, if you don't do the ritual, it's not just going to happen.
Right.
Just because, I mean, just logically, that stuff just doesn't happen. And obviously, when you have OCD, it's something that you can't comprehend necessarily. And I don't want to say comprehend. You can comprehend, but it's something that's just really difficult to get past. And it's something that definitely, I mean, it really does help. Because,
right.
you know, I'll walk up and down the stairs and nothing bad happens. And it doesn't, and my anxiety goes away. And I think, like, okay, that was okay. I can do that again. And then you can do it the next time. And then once you break down one wall, it's like everything else comes crumbling down in a way. Because once you kind of like, I mean, it's if it's all based on the belief that your rituals keep your anxiety from, or keep whatever it is from happening, then once you do the first one and nothing happens,
right?
It's kind of like, oh, well, this is a terrible belief system. Like, I don't, and I'm basing it all off the same thing. So then everything starts to crumble down, and you start to realize that you don't need to do all these rituals. And
so you really do recognize over time the fallacy of your thinking.
Yeah.
You shift it.
It's definitely harder for people. I mean, sometimes it all depends. Like, I mean, I was very lucky with something that I only was really in the thick of for maybe a year before I went to the program. But there are people, I mean, I was in the program and there was a guy in the program with me who was 70 years old. And he had been dealing with OCD ever since he was like my age. He said maybe 15 or 16.
Wow.
And that's just something that I cannot imagine. So obviously it's more difficult for him to get over his OCD because it's something that's it's more deeply manifested in all of his daily routines. So
how did he do?
The thing about him, it's very important going to the program to be like optimistic.
Yeah.
I not just like, oh, hey, like OCD is nothing. Like I can be happy, but it's obviously something that's like difficult for people. It's not a fun thing, but it's more so like hopeful, that you can overcome it. And he was very optimistic, very hopeful. So he was definitely doing a lot better. He was in there longer than I was. So I left before I saw him leave. But I mean, he definitely seemed like he was doing a lot better by the end of it than he was at the beginning. And people do relapse, like same with addiction or alcohol addiction, whatever, to anything.
Really. Right, right.
So people come back to the program and it's hard for people, but it's really just all about going all or nothing. And black or white, like I was saying,
yeah.
Which is kind of what your OCD wants, but it really is what you need. I mean, it's almost like, it's like weeds in a garden. I mean, if you like cut one weed, you know, you stop one ritual. If there's still like other weeds in the garden, it's just going to grow all over. And then you need to get all of the weeds in order for it to stop. You know what I mean?
That's why a program's important, huh?
Absolutely.
Because you got to get every weed.
Exactly. You got to do everything. You can't just go in and be like, okay, like I'll like work on these rituals, but this one's too like big for me to work on. So I'll just leave that and whatever. I mean, if you leave anything, it's just going to grow back.
Anxiety is so slippery that way, isn't it?
Oh,
because
absolutely.
It's like if you leave a little bit, it will grow.
It will grow,
faster.
Yeah. And that's why you really need to go all or nothing.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, it's really difficult and exhausting, but it's very important that you work on every aspect.
You said that you got to go into a program like that with optimism. And as you're talking this whole hour, I'm thinking, like, what is it about Emmett that is so... that's such a draw? You're a very charismatic guy. And part of it is that you seem fundamentally optimistic and positive in almost every way, like on your worst day. And, you know, and I think about your anxiety, and when I think back to stories that you've told me, I'm thinking, I don't remember it ever taking you out of something. You're like a lot of people who are anxious opt out, just don't do certain things, right? They don't go to school, or they don't get involved with friends, or they don't go to their extracurricular thing or whatever. You seemed like you always functioned. You always did what you had to do. Am I missing that?
Well, no. I mean, I would definitely say I know what you're saying, and I definitely would never voluntarily opted out of anything just to like make it easier on my OCD or anxiety. But obviously, the reason I went into the program is just because it got to the point where it became so overwhelming that it did get in the way of my life. But I mean, I would say you're right. I mean, it's definitely something that I work on, being continuously optimistic, just because I think the worst thing you could do is just give into it early on and then just let it take over your life.
Right.
And it's the same thing. I mean, my mom tells me, like, you know, like anybody tells you, like with terrorists, like if you don't go on vacation to Europe, then the terrorists are winning. If you let them take over your life, that's what they're trying to do. And I mean, it's kind of the same thing that your anxiety and OCD is trying to do. It's just trying to take over. And if you give in and you let it take over that easily, I mean, you don't stand a chance. It's just going to take over your life. And then you're not living a life at that point. You're not doing anything you want to be doing. And then your life is just your OCD or your anxiety. And that's a terrible thing. I mean, and I'm not saying that it's easy to not do that. I don't blame anybody. I definitely understand people who get to that point.
Right.
And I'm not saying anything bad about them, but it's something that you really have to work against, because once you give in, it's like, it's really difficult to start fighting back at it.
Anxiety as internal terrorism.
Absolutely.
That, I mean, that is really a powerful concept. So Emmett, you were telling me that when you came out of the hospital program, you decided very overtly not to make that secret, that you were going to be honest with people about where you'd been and what you'd been doing. How did you decide that, and why did you decide that?
Yeah, so, basically, there. Just to give it some, like, background, there's a liaison in the program that kind of helps you get back into school after you've been out of school so long, being
right.
in the program. So what they asked me at the end of the program, they were asking, hey, what do you want to say? We can kind of come up with a story for, like, where you were during this time, so that you don't have to tell people exactly what you were doing. And she said it's common to tell people that you had mono. It's a similar amount of time. But I talked to my mom about it, and we decided pretty much right off the bat that we wanted to tell everybody where we were. I mean, not like I didn't need to, like, make it a show.
Right.
But anybody who asked where I was, I mean, I told them exactly where. And first of all, something that is important is that leaves, I mean, if you tell 100% truth, there's no room for rumors. You know, nobody can tell you, if you told them where you were for that amount of time, they can't say you were anywhere else. And that's something that I think a lot of kids might worry about, saying, you know, kids starting to make fun of them for, like, being away at some hospital or whatever it was.
Right, doubling back on lying and trying to figure out.
Yeah,
right,
and that's something that just makes it more difficult, obviously.
Right.
So, I mean, for that reason alone, that was a reason why we did it. But more specifically because, it was something that I wanted to help people out with. It wasn't something that I wanted to just go through secretly and fix and then overcome and then never tell anybody about, and just kind of keep a secret. Because that, I mean, that would almost be a little selfish, I think. Obviously we made it into a situation where I could help other people. So I think for a lot of people, hearing that, I don't want to say that, like, I'm a normal guy, because everybody's a normal person.
Right.
Everybody who gets it is a normal person. But I think a lot of people don't realize that it's something that can really just take over, like, a normal life.
And you might be, in fairness to you, maybe an unlikely candidate to be suffering from something emotional or mental, right?
Well, maybe in the eyes of some people, but
right.
definitely what is important for people to know is that I'm not an unlikely candidate at all, because it really can happen to anybody.
Right.
And a lot of people don't necessarily think of it that way. They think, like, some people are like, oh, those are the kids with anxiety or OCD or whatever it might be.
Because they dress a certain way. They seem down. They seem depressed.
Yeah, whatever
they seem isolated.
It might be. So people start to kind of develop, you know, a sort of, like, there's a stigma around it for certain. But they just kind of start to group it in with certain people. So,
and was the idea to lift that stigma? Was that part of the idea of being
honest?
I mean,
definitely. Something that was interesting really quickly while I was in the hospital was that there were so many people coming in. Literally every day a new patient was admitted into the program, which is something that I think is important for people to know, because there are literally so many people who are going through this. I don't know the specific, but one in however many kids, and it's not that many kids that it's out of.
Right, not a small number.
Not a small number of kids, not a large number of kids that it's out of.
right.
You know what I'm saying.
A lot of people suffer from this stuff.
Absolutely.
A lot of people suffer.
A lot more than you would think. I think it was definitely to lift the stigma. And it was interesting because I had one person in specific come up to me and like, I'm going through like some pretty weird stuff right now that I think is OCD and I don't know what to do and my parents don't know about it and I just don't know what to do. And it was something that was, I mean, kind of amazing to me because like it really, I mean, like I chose to tell people and then it helped somebody like pretty, I mean, like, you know, one after another.
Right, linear.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, very. So it was kind of really powerful for me to see, like, how much that can really help people. Just letting people know and just, like, creating awareness about it. Because, I don't know, I just didn't expect, I mean, I didn't expect somebody to actually come up to me and, like, ask for my help and then, like, get into, I mean, now he's seeing a doctor about it and he's doing better. And I just didn't expect that sort of thing.
What a great, like, really ripple effect, right?
Oh, yeah. And it just happened, I mean, so quickly after. So it was very, I mean, it was really rewarding, honestly. It definitely made me feel really good about it.
That's an awesome story. And yeah. I love that idea that, you know, you destigmatize something. You're open about it. And good things come from that. Not what people fear when they decide to be disingenuous or not be honest and tell their whole story. So given where you are now, what does the future look like for an Emmett? What happens next? Well, what do you picture 10 years down the road?
Oh, I don't know. I honestly have no idea. I mean, there are definitely things I think I'm interested in now, but it could all change. But I couldn't tell you. I guess right now I'm just focusing on, I mean, school. Because yep. that's my job right now. And I guess, I don't know. I mean,
are you optimistic? Do you feel like
things are coming to right? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm very happy with... I don't know. I think I'm extremely optimistic about my life ahead of me. So I couldn't tell you specifically, but I guess I'm definitely not. It's not something that I'm straying away from. Is growing up. I'm definitely happy to be like continuing to move on and.
And it's good to see you happy, and it's hard not to share your optimism. So I really appreciate you spending a little time here.
Yeah.
And would you come back and talk to us again sometime?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.